Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us to chat a little bit about the conference finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Of course, the Eastern Conference series resuming tonight between the Rangers and the Panthers. He's part of ESPN's NHL coverage. He is Arda Okal. Arda, thank you very much for doing this today. How are you?
Gentlemen, I'm doing great. How about yourselves?
We're doing very well. We're in the midst of silly season for the Canucks, rumor season, speculation season, so that's a lot of fun. But the conference finals are a lot of fun as well. And game four between the Panthers and the Rangers, and really, you know, wild game in game three. I mean, the Panthers just tilting the ice, the Rangers stealing it in overtime, the Trouba taking the spotlight, you know, Panthers players going after Rempe after the overtime goal. What are you kind of expecting just in total on the ice in terms of the sideshow, the game within the game, all of it in game four tonight?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the Rempe thing, because there's been a lot of conversation about should he be in the lineup, should he not. He's playing limited minutes. In his return, he played 10 minutes. He's played less since then. But to exactly what you just brought up, the fact that the Panthers players were targeting him as he was going to skate to celebrate with his team after the overtime victory. They were hacking him and slashing him and bumping him around, hoping to get a rise out of him in that moment. That, to me, says everything you need to know about why Matt Rempe is in the lineup. And until he proves himself to be some sort of calamity on the ice, like a sort of liability in certain moments, which he hasn't done yet, I don't see why this is even a conversation. I think that he's a great addition to that lineup, and it shows mentally. It's certainly in the heads of the Panthers players who are trying to get a rise out of him, and also shifting the balance and the vibe and the tenor of the series. So the Rangers have a lopsided record. I think it's like 15-1, or it's ridiculous how many times they've won versus what they've only lost once since Matt Rempe's been in the lineup for the Rangers, regular season and postseason. So interestingly enough, in this series, though, the team that has had the lion's share of scoring chances has lost all of these games. And, like, Game 3 was a great example of that, right? Like, the Panthers were all over the Rangers, but they hung on. Shesterkin stood on his head, even though he let in four goals. And this was the first time in, like, 32 games that the Rangers allowed four goals in a postseason game and won. Now, that just goes to show you the resiliency of that team.
Are you surprised that Rempe has been so apparently successful at getting in the head of the Panthers? Because I just look at this Panthers team, and it's, you know, they went to the Stanley Cup final last year. They have, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, who's kind of one of the best trolls in the NHL in his own right, like Sam Bennett, who's no stranger to getting under the skin of the other team. It feels like usually they're the ones doing this to their playoff opponent, and yet it's been kind of remarkable, as you said, like how well Rempe has succeeded at putting them on the back foot.
And to your point, like, Matthew Tkachuk has tried every trick in the book too, right? Like scrums after goals, going after guys, taking them down. Like Trocheck, I think that was game three, right after the goal, where he just like sort of like leg takedown and was sort of like holding his jersey on the ice. Like, he's trying everything he can while using his mouth guard as chewing gum, as he is known to do. I will say this about Matt Rempe too. If I didn't know anything about Matt Rempe and how big he was and his imposing figure, and you told me a guy that uses Jiminy Crickets as a, like, just a colloquial term is going to be an imposing figure on the ice, I would not have believed you. But here we are. He definitely is.
So we've been talking a lot about Rempe, and I knew that the Panthers were in trouble dealing with this guy when he had a quote before the series talking about how he's got some bad blood with Tkachuk because Tkachuk left Calgary, where he's from. So he's got a bone to pick with him. And I thought, man, that is the only safe way to actually threaten a player before a series, and he found it. It was very Tom Wilson-esque. Like, he found the line. And to me, I always think if you're physically imposing and you can find a way to toe the line, that makes you exceptionally scary. What about Rempe's intelligence sort of helps him be this kind of threatening figure in this series, in your view?
So he actually, like, the other thing that Pierre Laviolette has said is he's not going to play Matt Rempe if he's not contributing on the ice. Like, obviously you have the show part of it, right? Like, you have, he wins a face-off in the game and MSG goes wild. It's like the Rock hitting a people's elbow or something like that, you know? Like, you have the sideshow part of it. You have the rock star element of it. And I understand all that. But at the end of the day, and again, Laviolette has expressed as much, he's not going to get minutes. He's not going to play. And certainly, like he, like the Jiminy Crickets quote, like, he's not going to be put into the game with a minute or two left in the third period if there is not a reason to put him there, and if the coach doesn't believe he's going to contribute. And he has done, he's solid in the corners. He's certainly trying to make the right passes at the right times, and his net front presence is pretty imposing. So he does have a lot of positives that he is bringing to those moments. And to your point about finding the right quotes or finding the right ways to get into your opponent's heads, I guarantee you that he is in the Florida Panthers' heads, that they're thinking about him, that he is there lingering, even if it's not at the forefront at all times. The second he steps on the ice, he becomes a story and he becomes a gravitational force.
With the job Laviolette has done, because I've tended to be a Rangers skeptic in recent seasons, and this year they've kind of flipped me. Like, I truly believe that this is a team that's good enough to actually take home the Stanley Cup potentially, although I think they're in tough against this Panthers team. But for all that I admire the way they play, the idea of them in the Stanley Cup final and just multiple weeks on end of Trouba Rempe discourse, I don't know if I can handle it. How are you preparing?
Well, first of all, I think that the Rangers in the Stanley Cup final, if you don't like the Rangers, and I understand, I'm, you know, we're on Vancouver yep. radio here, so there is some lingering history, so I understand this. But the Rangers, as a big market team, a well-supported team, that would be overall good for, obviously, the city of New York, but hockey yes. overall. I think that people will mm-hmm. see that reflected in the ratings in the United States. I think people will see that reflected in the interest and how often hockey is spoken about on non-hockey programs, et cetera. I think that that will certainly translate. I also think that those are the two biggest news items or things that are spoken about with the Rangers, because those are the most controversial topics. And with Trouba, of course, we're always going to talk about the chicken wing and the elbow and or the elbows. And, you know, was it a major or a minor, et cetera, right? Like, we're always going to talk about that. Can I just flip this back to you for a second? So in
of
that
course.
Sequence, right, where they were debating whether that was a major penalty and it became a minor, right? The elbowing yep. call that didn't hit the head, it hit sort of like the neck. To me, the thing that my big takeaway there was, Trouba had two separate infractions. He had what, the slashing 20 seconds before that, delayed penalty, then the elbow. That's the second infraction separate, right? That becomes a four-minute penalty. I get it. That is the letter of the law. That's in the rule book. That's the way the rule goes. But if it were two separate people, if Trocheck had done the slash and Trouba hit the elbow, that would have been a two-minute five-on-three. Why doesn't it just become a five-on-three 2 minutes if the same player does both infractions? Wouldn't every single team want that?
It's a good question.
I don't have an answer for you. Like, that's, you're right. It should be like that. You should serve it concurrently. If it's not like a double minor, but it's you taking the same penalty.
Exactly.
You're right. That's wild.
Like, Trouba sitting in the box, he's serving a four-minute penalty for two separate infractions at different times.
Yeah.
To me, that just seemed like, I get it. It's the rule. It's in the book. But to me, it's like, no, nobody would want that if given the choice.
Yeah, no, everyone would take the two-minute five-on-three. It'd be a wild advantage to have that. And rather than,
right?
Yeah, double minor situation for two separate infractions. So from Florida's perspective now, right? And look, we've already seen examples of this in these Stanley Cup playoffs, right, where it seems like a series is really tilting in one team's favor and they have all the momentum and then the other team turns it around and is able to secure the win. Is the challenge for them just trying to block out all of this noise and kind of take a step back and say, like, hey, when we're playing our game, we're out-chancing them, we're out-shooting them on a pretty consistent basis here. If we do that, we should still be able to come back and win this series.
Yes, and hope that Shesterkin doesn't have a fantastic game every single game. Like, they're getting the shot volume, they're getting the shot quality, and they're getting the lion's share of shot attempts. That happened in Game 3, and they just happened to lose in overtime. And by the way, all of these games have been close. Yes, Game 1 was 3-0, but really it was 1-0 midway through the third period, and then an own goal by Lafreniere. Okay, that's a mistake, it happens. And then an empty net goal, it's suddenly 3-0. But the Panthers have definitely owned the majority of the series, especially the second period. And that was going to happen again in the third game. In the first two games, the Rangers went upwards of 11 to 17 minutes without a shot on goal. The Panthers were just owning them in the middle frame in games 1 and 2. And it was going to happen in game 3 also. They were up to like 5 or 6 minutes, the first like 6 minutes of the second period, until they took a penalty. So that's another thing. Even though the Rangers have not had any success on the power play in this series so far, you don't want to give them the opportunity to do so, because that has been one of their aces in the hole throughout the whole regular season. Everyone talks about their question marks at 5-on-5, but their special teams have been terrific. At most stretches of the postseason, they've had more shorthanded goals than other teams that have had power play goals against them, things like that. So you don't want to give them opportunities, and you want to continue that pressure, especially in the middle frame. But if the Panthers continue to play that the way that they're playing, they're going to beat most teams. It's just they're running into a team that, I don't know, destiny, motivation, momentum, players are playing really well, goaltender's awesome, whatever you want to call it, they're running into this New York wall.
So, yeah, I know the team of destiny thing and a lot of, 94 parallels that people have been throwing around with the Rangers. Are you buying in that they are, in fact, the team of destiny this year?
I mean, I'll buy into it so much as it's fun to talk about. Like, it creates narratives for us to, like, discuss on talk shows, on our podcasts, and our shows on television.
And isn't that the most important thing, Arda?
Yes! You know this. You have to do content every day. You guys know this very well. So if it gives us stuff to talk about and find more parallels and dig them up, then no problem. Yes, the 94 Team of Destiny, here they come. President's Trophy. They sweep the first series just like they did in 94 against the Islanders. The parallels are unparalleled. Keep it going. Except they won't play the Vancouver Canucks in the finals. I'm
sadly
sorry,
no.
By the way,
yeah.
I hope
yeah.
no Canucks fan listening right now is supporting the lone remaining Canadian team in the playoffs.
I don't think very many are. I think that you'll earn yourself a lot of brownie points here in the market. I don't know if you've noticed this. There's this whole like marketing campaign from a chain restaurant here in Canada trying to get all Canadian fans to cheer for the last remaining Canadian team, the Edmonton Oilers, and it is not going over well. People are not impressed with this campaign.
It is the silliest argument that we as Canadians have every single year. I don't care that a Canadian team has not won the Stanley Cup since 1993. I was born and raised in Canada, okay? I know this. I have lived through this. I don't care about 1993. I don't care about, oh, there's one Canadian team left. There's only 7 teams in the NHL. We're America Junior, whatever people call us. I get all that. The only Canadian team that every Canadian should be cheering for, from BC to the Maritimes and the Territories, is Team Canada. Forget about the gender. Forget about the age. All genders, all ages, you cheer for Team Canada. Connor McDavid in a Team Canada sweater, my favorite player. I hope he scores 10 goals. I hope he raises a gold medal. I hope he kisses it high in the sky, and I will hug him in the streets if I see him. But Connor McDavid in an Edmonton Oilers jersey, if you are not an Oilers fan, I hope he stumbles and loses and never wins the Stanley Cup. That's how you should be as a fan. If you are not a fan of the Edmonton Oilers, if you are a fan of the Vancouver Canucks or any other team, That's how it should work in sports. I don't know why we have this argument. By the way, I asked my American colleagues this. Hey, what if there was a 30-year American team drought in the NHL? Would you suddenly cheer for the Florida Panthers if you were a Nashville Predators fan because America and you're patriotic? And they were like, no, that's silly. Yeah, of course it's silly. It's absolutely silly. Why do we have this conversation every year?
I truly don't know. It feels like it would be equivalent of like a Duke fan cheering for North Carolina in March Madness for like ACC pride. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, they got us, but let's go ACC. It's like, no, they're our biggest rival. What are you talking about?
Right, right. Cheer for stories, cheer for players. Like, I can get behind like players on the Dallas Stars because they have the most amount of players that have played over 1,000 games and haven't won a Stanley Cup. Okay, I get the human interest of that, but I'm not going to suddenly be like Homer Simpson and have my teams crest into the bushes and come out a Dallas Stars jersey. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to, like, I can support storylines. Oh, yeah, like the athletic director has been working there for 40 years and hasn't won a cup and finally gets to raise one. Amazing. That's a great story. But you're cheering for the human being, the person, the human interest story, not the crest.
Yeah, it's always been a baffling one for me. In fact, even as like in my days as a hardcore fan, not only did I not cheer for the last Canadian team, like I cheered against them the hardest because it would be the most annoying result if you're like a hardcore Canucks fan for them to win.
Exactly. You want the next Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup to be your team.
Yeah.
Canucks fans listening to this, it should be the Vancouver Canucks in your eyes to win the Stanley Cup next. It shouldn't be any other Canadian team. In fact, you would want them not to win. You would want the drought to continue
exactly.
Until the Canucks can win and Artur Shelov becomes the Conn Smythe Trophy winner and they're dancing around on the ice.
By the way, I mean, first of all, I think you're exactly right, right? You want the bragging rights of ending the drought. By the way, just since you brought up international hockey and cheering for Team Canada, I know you work and you co-host the podcast with USA hockey superfan Greg Wyshynski. How nervous are you about the upcoming Four Nations Cup, considering Canada's situation and goal, and what that's going to do to your working life with Wyshynski if the USA comes out on top?
It's going to suck. It's going to be awful. I'm going to call in sick that day. He's already starting to troll. He's already on his high horse, first of all, okay? Like, it's the worst. Like, Drance, you've been on our show before, right? Like, he loves any opportunity he has to espouse the greatness of Team USA and the golden generation. And look at our goaltenders. Do you want one? We could spare our third goalie. Ha, 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 Wish. Very funny, okay? We understand what situation we're in as Canadians here, okay? But that doesn't mean that we can't pull off a miracle. Okay, you guys had a miracle in 1980. Maybe we can have a miracle in 2025. We'll see. But all I'm saying is it ain't over till it's over, and I don't want to hear about it right now because America does look pretty good, and I'm a little bit nervous about it, boys, and I try not to bring it up with him as much as possible.
I get it.
See, the thing about the goaltending is, yes, America has three goaltenders that would all start for Team Canada, but only one gets to play at a time. And Nathan MacKinnon and Connor McDavid aren't exactly wearing blue when these teams play. Like, I don't know, man. They're just goalies. They're fungible.
They're the NFTs of hockey. Yes.
No. NFTs are non-fungible.
Oh, right. That's true. Thank you for the...
I'm not going to explain the difference. I'm not sure I understand it, but that's what I remember it stands for. Well, let's hope we can find a fungible or non-fungible goalie by the time that tournament rolls around. Hey, Arda, really appreciate the time, man. This was a lot of fun. Our listeners are fired up about your not cheering for the Oilers take. So, as I said, you earned yourself a lot of fans here. Thanks for doing this.
Love it. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
That is Arda Okal from ESPN's NHL coverage. Also co-hosts The Drop with Greg Wyshynski. Producer Dom, you're putting your hand up.
I have a wild stat or fact that I found out today. I myself love to watch the World Hockey Championships. It's a big thing in Europe, big thing for Slovaks.
Czechs.
And the Czechs, yeah.
Bigger thing for them, I'd
winning
say,
at the home, yeah.
Yeah.
I found out today, I didn't realize this, the Americans, not only have they not won gold at the World Hockey Championship since 1960, they haven't been in a gold medal game at the World Hockey Championships since 1960.
Is that true?
I went through the whole list of winners, and they haven't been in a gold medal game since 19. It's crazy.
That is wild.
And we're supposed to be scared of this country? And we're supposed to be fearful?
So their last
50-year losers.
Their last senior level men's hockey title of any sort would be what? The 1996 World Cup of Hockey? Which is like one of the least memorable international tournaments.
What do you mean least memorable? I was crushed. I'm still not over it.
It was a bummer, but still.
Dude, that tournament was amazing. That rocked.
I'm just saying, if you're ranking like, and I'm not even mean from a Canadian perspective, but just from like remember this moment in international hockey? You're getting to an awful lot of moments before the 96 World Cup of Hockey. An awful, awful lot.
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, you are, but like that's mostly because Canada lost. So we don't remember it the way we remember all the wins.
There's definitely some truth to that.
I was crushed. Tell 9-year-old me that tournament doesn't matter, and he will be crying on his and disagree with you strongly. That tournament was sick. By the way, on the Boston Pizza thing, really quick, I know we got to go to break and have a guest on the other side. Was the outrage because they were appropriating the green men?
I think that was part of it. Two, it's just like,
defensive about the green men now?
It's one thing. Well, no, it's lame to like rip off their vibe though.
But also not having the jerseys.
Yeah, and it's I think it is what it is.
They're a ripoff of an Always Sunny in Philadelphia thing.
I understand that. It's one thing to run ads. It's another thing to do like immersive, like, okay, well now they've jumped from just being on the TV to like the ads are in the building and they're like being featured on brands. Like, no, this is too much. I think that's the source of the annoyance.
I'll be honest with you. The outrage over this one was one that just like completely flew over my head, especially because I was like, we can't possibly be like, you can't interfere with the purity of the green men. It's like, come on.
Drance, oh, fake dart guy. You're a big Leafs guy.
No,
what
it was real. It was
guy?
Real dart guy.
Are you sure?
That's what they were saying in the morning show. I think it was the real dart guy.
Although guys, it's 2024 now, right? So he's now vape guy. Congrats to him.
Anyways, I think it's just like, it's one thing for ads to be annoying. It's another thing when they like seep into reality and break the fourth wall. I think that to me is like the main source of the annoyance with it from last night. All right, we'll take a break. We will talk, check in on the other conference final in the West, where the Dallas Stars, big comeback win over the Oilers to take a 2-1 series lead. Saad Youssef, who covers the Stars for The Athletic, joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. This hour is brought to you by Applewood Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi's 10-year, 160,000-kilometer powertrain warranty is bold, but they have over 100 years to back it up. Details at Applewood Mitsubishi in the Richmond Auto Mall. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. We talked at length about the Eastern Conference Final with Arta Okal in the previous segment. We'll turn our attention to the Western Conference Final now. Of course, saw the Dallas Stars take a 2-1 series lead last night in Edmonton. Saad Youssef of The Athletic joins us here on the show. Saad, thank you very much for doing this today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And, you know, really dramatic game last night in Edmonton. Stars come out pretty flat. Edmonton's all over them. 2-0 lead. And then the Stars just completely flip the script in the second period, end up going up 3-2, eventually get the win. And take the 2-1 series lead. What's your kind of big picture takeaway from what you saw in Edmonton last night?
Well, I think, you know, I mentioned this online as well. I think like last night was Edmonton's best shot. Like, I feel that's how it felt. The way that, you know, you saw the scoring, you know, early on, it was McDavid to Hyman, then McDavid himself. Like, these are Edmonton's – none of that was fluky. That's what Edmonton does. And so I feel like the Stars absorbed Edmonton's best shot. And Stuart Skinner, you know, I think what it comes down to for Dallas, obviously we know that they're a deep team and they're deeper than Edmonton, you know, up front with the forwards and the defensemen. But I think the biggest thing is Jake Ottinger is just playing out of this world so far in the postseason. And really, if you extend that back to like the last 18 games of the regular season as well. And I think what it really boils down to for me is I just have a lot more confidence in Jake Ottinger than I do in Stuart Skinner. And so, you know, I think last night was a really good opportunity for Edmonton. Obviously, the Stars had the flurry of goals in 3 minutes in the second period. And, you know, it just kind of felt like when it rained, it pours. And that's kind of what happened for Dallas yesterday.
And, of course, the guy keying the comeback in the second period, eventually scoring the hat trick, was Jason Robertson. You know, breaks a goal slump for him, but also notable that it happened in the game where Roope Hintz returned to the lineup. How much of a connection is there between those two things, right? Hintz coming back to the lineup and Robertson getting going and having the big night.
Oh, a huge connection. You saw that with the last goal he scored as well, with just, you know, Roope, his impact and everything. So I think I think one thing that Roope Hintz does, and you know, I mentioned this last year when Jason Robertson had a really bad postseason, really for the first two rounds of the 2023 playoffs for the Stars. The thing that's notable with that is that Jason Robertson quite literally has played his entire career next to Roope Hintz. He has never played. I mean, Joe Pavelski has been rotating on the top line, especially this season. But since Jason Robertson broke into the league in 2021, Roope Hintz has always been his centerman. So they have a deep connection. I think Robertson plays really well off of Roope as well. I believe Roope Hintz finished fourth in Selke voting this year, which tells you just the kind of two-way forward that he is. With Jason Robertson being more of the offensive forward, Roope Hintz, the way that he plays in the defensive zone, the way that he uses his speed, his ability to be a playmaker, not just goal scorer, he's able to set up Robertson really well. I think there's a huge connection with Roope Hintz and Jason Robertson, you know, on the ice, and Roope Hintz returning and why Jason Robertson really popped off in that way.
Saad, thanks so much for being on our program today. I just want to let our listeners know, and correct me if this is a lie, Saad, but I want to let our listeners know that you're the only hockey writer I know who was also high school teammates with Arizona Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray.
Well, not teammates, but we did. We were in school, and I played quarterback as well, so we went to a lot of camps together and things like that. So I did know him decently well back in high school.
Kyler Murray's backup then. which is even
yes.
Cooler, especially because in Vancouver, they love the backup. That's the rule of Vancouver. Saad, how does it feel to be covering Canada's team?
Well, I mean, you can tell the weight of the entire nation is on Edmonton right now, obviously with the drought that's been going on with Canada. I mean, look, I think the way that you kind of see Edmonton and the star power that they have, it's really cool. I mean, you know, I think that Connor McDavid, the Dreisaitls, and Hyman factor, all that kind of stuff, it's really fun to be covering, like, you know, or to be watching Edmonton play against a Sunbelt team like that, and you know, really riding, being the last Canadian team that's alive as well. I think that's a really underrated, cool story factor.
With regards to Robertson and the hat trick performance last night, you know, this is a guy who sort of across two playoff runs now, the production hasn't always been there. Like, to some extent, it feels like this was almost his first, like, real signature playoff moment since he became Dallas's kind of most important forward. What do you think that means, just from a narrative perspective, to the player and to the fan base?
Yeah, I mean, I think it means a lot because you're absolutely right. That was his first signature moment. But I will say before, like, you know, just to peel it back a little bit, like, I think last year Jason Robertson really struggled in the playoffs. This year, I would say
yeah.
The production hasn't necessarily been there. But, I mean, look, he was two posts away in game one from you know, being the hero in game one against Edmonton with the overtime winner on that power play that McDavid was sitting in the box. So, you know, yes, the hat trick was great, and I think, you know, that is his signature moment. But he's been making plays, and the reason why that it's kind of taken him a little bit of time is because he's a player that relies on time and space more than most players. And also on top of that, he's not somebody who has the skating ability that, you know, obviously someone like McDavid does. And that's why he fell to the second round in 2017. The biggest knock on him was his skating ability. So I think he's learned how to create time and space now on the ice. And that's why even last year, if you look at the bottom line production, he was actually producing decently overall. But all that production was coming on the power play, again, when he had more time and space to work with. This year, he's really been able to adjust himself. And also, it's worth mentioning that it's a product of the circumstances as well. Dallas is so deep that Robertson, Hintz, Pavelski was always known as the top line. I don't know that really that's such a slam dunk conclusion at this point, because for the most part in Dallas this year, the Duchesne line was the best line. And then in the second half of the season, it was Ben Johnson and Stengoven as the best line. So I think there's been a lot, you know, defensively, opposing teams haven't been able to key in on Robertson the same way they were previously.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Wyatt Johnston, Logan Stankoven, and Jamie Benn line has just been incredible. And, you know, Wyatt Johnston has scored so many big goals already for the team in the playoffs, but Stankoven was really great for them down the stretch as well. Just, like, how important was it for the Stars? Because we always talk about their depth, but not just to have the depth with those young players, but the extremely high ceiling and kind of ability to be game breakers from those players got further down the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's super important. And you know, that's how you kind of overcome sometimes bad contracts and things like that. Not necessarily, obviously, Tyler Seguin has had a great postseason and Jamie Benn is playing well also. But those are players that are making $9.5 million a year. And, you know, maybe if they're not playing up to exactly that price tag, then you have a guy like Wyatt Johnston who's on an entry-level contract and led the Stars in goals this year. So it all kind of balances out, and it helps create more balance for Dallas and the way that they're able to roll out the lines. The other thing with that, though, is that it really fits well with the way Pete DeBoer plays and the way Pete DeBoer coaches. You know, my first few years covering the Stars was with Rick Bowness as head coach. And you know, there's different styles in the way that coaches like to operate their lineup. Rick Bowness was a very matchup-driven coach. You know, the team was very different at home versus on the road when they had the benefit of last change. Pete DeBoer is not that way. Pete DeBoer rolls four lines. And so when you have guys like Logan Stankoven and Wyatt Johnston lower on the payroll making those kind of plays, I mean, as you mentioned, like, you know, Johnston was really good, but so was Stankoven. And remember, that was Dallas's third line. Their top line was Robertson, Hintz, Pavelski, and second line was Marchment, Duchesne, Seguin in the regular season. So when your third line is able to play like your first, I mean, it just helps really the entire system work the way that it did.
Yeah, it's pretty I mean there's 31 other teams that would love to have a third line playing like that one is for the Dallas Stars right now. And you know, the other thing you could say that about is, you know, look, there's plenty of really elite defensemen left in these playoffs, but what Miro Heiskanen is doing, I mean, he might be playing the best of any blue liner left in these playoffs so far. Is he the kind of Conn Smythe favorite if Dallas was to go all the way and win the cup this year?
You know, he's been one of the most underrated players in the NHL for quite a few years now. And the reason why is because a lot of his brilliance is just, first of all, he makes it look so easy. And you know, if you look at his stick work, the way that he skates so gracefully, I think a lot of times you just kind of take it for granted, even when you're just watching. And then at the end of the day, you look at his impact and you see why he's one of the best in the world. You know, it's tough for the Conn Smythe conversation because, to me, it's a three. If Dallas does win and Dallas gets the, a Dallas player gets it, for me, it's a three-way race between Miro Heiskanen, Jake Ottinger, and Wyatt Johnston. And a lot of it will depend on how they close out the Edmonton series. And then, you know, if they do go to the Stanley Cup final and if they win that, kind of how that goes. Because, look, if the New York Rangers make it to the Stanley Cup final and if Jake Ottinger keeps playing the way he does and he outduels Igor Shesterkin, like, I think, you know, it'd be hard to not put Jake Ottinger in the front of that conversation. But you're absolutely right. Miro Heiskanen is incredible, and the way that he's playing offensively, defensively is really awesome. And I will say one thing that he's benefited from a lot, speaking of depth, is the trade deadline acquisition of Chris Tanev, because Chris Tanev is an incredible defensive defenseman, whereas Miro Heiskanen is a little bit more complete in the way that he plays offense and defense. But if you look at the way the Stars have played Tanev, they stuck him on MacKinnon, they played him against Eichel, and so Miro Heiskanen gets freed up to do a lot of what he's really good at. So I think he's benefited from that, but, you know, he's an all-world player in his own right.
We have some listeners who probably have some Wyatt Johnston for Conn Smythe shares at like 150-1 sod. So it's a one horse race, please. Wyatt Johnston, come on.
Yeah, hey, no argument here. He's been incredible, obviously.
He's been their whole offense.
He has. And you know, the good thing with Wyatt is that, you know, as everybody knows, he just turned 21 a couple of weeks ago, and he plays centerman, he can play winger. He's done it all, and he also comes up in the big moments. And I think there's something to be said for that, where the way that he plays when the game is on the line. Last year, when he was a 19, just turned 20-year-old, he got the series-clenching goals, both against, in the first round against Minnesota and the second round against Seattle. So he comes up big in the biggest moments. And, you know, it's, for me, he's such an intellectually driven player. You can see the hockey IQ on the ice. You can tell that he lives in the same house as Joe Pavelski, with just the way that he plays. And so he's been incredible. And you're right. Like, even, and it's not a fluke. Look, he led the Dallas Stars in goals scored in the regular season. So this isn't something new that he's showing in the playoffs.
You're a big football guy, too, Saad. And of course, you're on radio down in Dallas. You have a really good sense of the market. You've got Luka Doncic eating the souls of the Minnesota Timberwolves. You've got the Dallas Stars up 2-1 in the Western Conference Final. And we know that the Cowboys are still leading every sports broadcast, discussing OTAs and on and on. How is this Stars playoff run and their sustained success over the course of the last 5 years, frankly, with multiple deep runs into the postseason, how is it changing the conversation for hockey in Dallas-Fort Worth at the moment?
Well, I think the Stars are benefiting from all of it. You could look at it as, you know, they don't have the lone spotlight on them, but I think they're benefiting from this because Dallas has kind of become the city of champions at this point. Look, the Texas Rangers are the reigning World Series champions as well. So, right. They just won the World Series in November. So when you look at the way that the entire city is kind of perceived, I think the Dallas Stars are getting lumped in with the Dallas Mavericks, both teams in the conference finals. The Dallas Cowboys, of course, they're perennial, you know, choking in the playoffs, but at the same time, they do play really well in the regular season and are a good team. So I think when you look at the way Dallas is perceived, I think Dallas, the Stars are really benefiting from this entire conversation. And, I don't know that hockey, the conversation around hockey has changed too much this year. I would say really in the, like, last year was just gigantic. You could almost feel the hockey narrative shifting in Dallas last year in the playoffs. And I think that it grew quite a bit because last year the Mavericks missed the playoffs. The Rangers were in the middle of a whatever regular season. You know, they were kind of a Cinderella story in the playoffs. And so the Dallas Stars had the lone spotlight and hockey became a really, you know, big charge in Dallas. And so I think they benefited in a really, really big way last year. And I think this year they're just kind of being in their own way. It's also a good thing, but they're kind of being lumped together with all these other winning programs in Dallas.
Dallas, Texas, the city of champions, and also the Cowboys.
Yes, exactly right.
Just before we let you go, I know you brought up Chris Tanev and kind of the domino effect for Miro Heiskanen, but obviously, you know, Chris Tanev, still a ton of fans here among our listeners and Canucks fans in this city. What kind of impact has he made for the Dallas Stars on and off the ice since coming over the trade deadline?
He's just been, whatever impact the Stars thought that he was going to make, he's surpassed those expectations because, one, like you mentioned, there's an off the ice factor too. He's such a great locker room guy. You know, you can tell when you talk to players just how much they appreciate having him around, and he's all business. But also, like, I mean, we all see the stories. We all see the narratives. You know, recently, you know, he had his tooth yanked out and just kept playing in the game. And that's just the kind of guy that he's in Dallas. There was a lot of question marks about would he hold up, because I believe when he came to Dallas in February, he led the NHL in blocked shots. And so his body does take a huge toll, but he's able to just play so many different positions or with so many different ways, whether you want to play him next to Thomas Harley, next to Miro Heiskanen. Right now he's playing next to Esa Lindell. Whatever you want to put him and have him do, he's able to do that. And then on top of that, as I mentioned, like, you know, the impact that he has on allowing Miro Heiskanen to not be the crutch that he's been for the Stars. I mean, the Stars in recent years, they've really just asked Miro to do everything. And now they don't have to do that because Miro didn't have – I mean, you don't – like I said, Pete DeBoer is not a coach that really likes to, you know, let other teams' players and personnel dictate matchups. But every time Nathan MacKinnon took the ice, Chris Tanev was – you know, Pete DeBoer was trying to get Chris Tanev on the ice. That's huge for Miro Heiskanen to not have to chase that guy around and allows him to do everything else because, again, Miro – also another thing with that is Miro doesn't play on the penalty kill as much anymore, and so Chris Tanev kind of helps in that department as well. So now Miro can play his 5-on-5 game, his 200-foot game, but he also can, you know, focus on the power play. He plays a lot of minutes, but they're not heavy minutes because Chris Tanev takes a lot of those from him. So – I think in general, like, Chris Tanev, just a player in his own right, has been phenomenal. But I think the domino effect that he's had on the entire organization has been huge.
Saad, really appreciate the time. Great insight into the Stars run. And thanks for doing this with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, no problem. That is Saad Youssef from The Athletic covering the Stars and also football down in Dallas. And, you know, as he mentioned, as you mentioned, Luka Doncic on the precipice of going to the NBA Finals, the Stars up 2-1 in their Western Conference Finals series. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm almost positive there's never been an NBA champ and a Stanley Cup champ from the same city in the same season. Who is more likely?
Much less the reigning World Series championship city.
At the same time. That's wild. Truly wild.
Yeah.
And it would be so funny. It would be so funny if it happened in the Cowboys city. Oh my gosh. And they were the combo breaker. It would be so funny. But anyways.
I love it.
It's so good.
I love it.
Who's more likely to let the city of Dallas down in their quest for history? The Stars or the Mavs?
The Mavs.
Yeah, just like the Celtics are too tough.
So, I do, yeah. I mean, the thing is like, Doncic is so clutch.
Yep.
And Boston is so not clutch. But their quality is so significant that, the NBA's really moved away from being the league where the best player just wins. Mm-hmm. Like, if you actually look at it, you know, in terms of, like, if the NHL standings were like the NBA standings, right? You'd basically have, like, the one seed versus the three seed in the East and the one seed versus, I think it's the five seed in the West, right? In terms of the conference finals. In the NBA, it's, like, one versus six, and then it's three versus five. Like, the NHL is actually chalkier this year than the NBA, and that's actually kind of been the case for a while. The volume of three-pointers is so high in basketball now that results are hugely variable. So it's more like the NHL playoffs than it ever was. And the Boston Celtics are the equivalent of, like, the team that has the sickest third line. You know what I mean? That's just, like, able to overpower everybody, even if they don't have the best star. You know, even if they don't have McDavid on their team, Doncic, I'm going to comp to McDavid here.
I think I saw someone make this point on Twitter, especially watching the Stars Oilers game last night, where it does feel like the NA, like, especially in these conference finals, there's an element of it being like a game of runs, like people say about the NBA, right? Where, and you were talking earlier in the show about, you know, teams hitting their top gear, and it seems like even when it's best on best, when it's four really good teams playing against each other, these teams are still capable of, like, demolishing each other for, like, 15-minute stretches. You know what I mean? And it's just kind of a question 100%. Of who, which I don't think was always the case at this level, right? But like we see a lot of games where it's like, oh, that period was a disaster for one team and a dominant performance by the other. And it's interesting. It's another like NBA. Like I feel like the sports are converging in some ways in the playoffs.
I do think, too, one thing I'm struck by, Jamie, honestly, is how much the Stars-Oilers matchup has looked like the Canucks-Oilers matchup.
Mm.
Like, I really fundamentally think, like, the major difference is Haskinen on Dreisaitl is a huge luxury for the Stars. But, like, fundamentally, I'm just not convinced that anybody can hit what the Oilers are throwing at the top of their lineup, and it's just going to come down to whether or not Skinner has enough whoopsies and whether the Oilers' inability to hold the lead, their like absolute allergy to holding a lead, actually bites them frequently enough for them to lose.
They are the mess around and find out team, and they did it again last night against the Stars, and they are back down in the series. That's it for us today. We will be back. Oh, before I go, of course, I have to tell you that this hour was brought to you by Applewood Mitsubishi. Mitsubishi's 10-year, 160,000-kilometer powertrain warranty is bold, but they have over 100 years to back it up. Details at Applewood Mitsubishi in the Richmond Auto Mall. We're back tomorrow with the crossover and Jason Buchla here on Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650.